This episode is brought to you in association with Janus Henderson Investors. It's for promotional purposes only, is not for forward distribution, and the value of an investment can fall as well as rise. Past performance is not a guide to future performance, and nothing in this episode should be construed as advice. Our discussion is for illustrative purposes only, and references made to individual securities should not constitute or form part of any offer or solicitation to issue, sell, subscribe, or purchase the security. Hello, and welcome to Trust Radio, the investment trust podcast hosted by Janus Henderson Investors, where we take a deep dive into the questions investors really want to know the answers to. My name is Andrew Chiguri, and today I'm joined by Nicholas Ware, co-portfolio manager of the Henderson Diversified Income Trust, to discuss some of the challenges being faced by fixed income investors and how he's steering the trust through this market environment. Nicholas also talks about signals from the bond market and how ESG integration is developing within fixed income markets. Nicholas, welcome to the studio.
Thank you for having me.
Now, the last 2 years have been particularly difficult for bond investors, and 2022 has brought with it more challenges. Inflation is on the rise, and central banks are going to start raising interest rates. And on top of that, the war in Ukraine has made matters worse. Firstly, why should anyone invest in bonds when yields are so low in the face of high inflation? And second, how has the trust performed and how are you navigating this market environment?
Fine. So bonds have underperformed year to date for the reasons that you've given. However, when we look back to 2020, when I look at the US high yield index, they've returned, in 2020, they returned 6%, and in 2021, 5.4%. But as you said, performance year to date for when I'm looking at the credit indices, I just came from my desk. So US high yield is down 7.2% year to date, and USOG is down 11.4%. This tends to happen in a late cycle environment where you've got accelerating inflation and rising rates, makes fixed income a harder place to invest. But what I would say is we shouldn't extrapolate what's happened in the last few months further forward. I think valuations are becoming getting more attractive, and a lot has been priced in already. So we see inflation is starting to peak or peaking, and also there are already 3 50-bit rate hikes for the next 3 Fed meetings in the price already. So I'd say a lot of it's priced in already. And therefore, I think particularly IG starts looking quite attractive here. What we are seeing, I think, is a fiscal and monetary hangover from the war on COVID. So what we've seen in the last 6 months is an inflation scare, which I believe over time will morph into a growth scare. What we've done to the portfolio is we've been scrutinizing the portfolio and looking through all the positions and have been adding a bit more IG at the expense of high yield.
In keeping with your sensible income approach, you invest in digital, less cyclical businesses. You talked about IG there. Where are you finding opportunities for yield, and could you provide some stock-specific examples?
So over the last 3 or 4 months, we've been adding IG names, or some IG names, as I said. So an example would be Allianz, the German insurer. They've got a rock-solid balance sheet. They're single A-rated. We bought some of their subordinated bonds yielding around 5.5% into the trust. Another deal that we added was Warner Brothers Discovery, a new issue. That's the merger between Discovery and Warner Media, which was spun out by AT&T. They're big E in both traditional media as well as streaming. They issued bonds during the March sell-off, and they issued a 10-year bond yielding 4.279% and a 20-year at 5.05% coupons. We added both of those during the March sell-off into the fund.
Are you increasing your allocation towards loans in this environment?
Yes, we have been. So towards the end of last year, we increased our exposure to loans, where we added a number of positions and took the exposure in the trust up to 12% of the portfolio.
So I think we touched on inflation briefly there, but for most retail investors, you know, the only bonds that they know that protect against inflation are TIPS. And for those who don't know it, they are Treasury Inflation Protected Securities. Now, HDF doesn't invest in TIPS. What is your take on inflation at the moment?
So what we're seeing, and we are halfway through the first quarter reporting season, is a number of companies have put hedges in place to protect themselves from raw material spikes. So they're not immediately impacted by it. But when we're looking through the numbers, we're seeing some of the companies are seeing an impact from rising labor costs, rising energy costs, and some supply chain issues as well at the moment. And today, for example, Unilever reported, and they were showing the fact that they were trying to pass through these price increases to their consumers, their global company. And what they were finding was that consumers, particularly in Europe and LATAM, were trading away from them. And so they saw volume declines because of the price increases that they were trying to push through.
For most people, is there a misconception about investing in bonds in an inflationary or, you know, a high interest rate environment that we're currently seeing at the moment?
So what you're describing is quite a difficult backdrop for fixed income. But with rising inflation, you have to break it out between the cyclical and the structural inflation story. And I think a lot of this inflation that we're seeing is due to the impacts from COVID being supply chain issues and so forth. And I think it's cyclical. Central banks are scared that this will become embedded and so become a structural story. And so they're getting increasingly hawkish to try and break it. I think, you know, the misconception is that people extrapolate these trends and say bonds are uninvestable. Whereas I think they do important things for their investors, which is to provide an income. And if you go to high-end investment grade, also hedge somewhat the equity side of your portfolio.
Looking at the macro picture, which is quite important at the moment, the yield on the two-year treasury briefly traded above that of the 10-year. Now, historically, such an invasion has been an accurate predictor of a recession, typically within 2 years. What is the bond market telling you about the possibility of a recession right now?
So you're right. Inversion is a late cycle indicator. It's basically telling you that if the central banks through all these rate increases that they're thinking of doing, it will likely trigger an economic slowdown, and they therefore have to start cutting rates thereafter. It's one of the signals that we look at. We also look at our rate of change of economic data. That is a proprietary model that we run on our desk, and then we've got different macro frameworks that we use as well. And they're all pointing to the same thing, which is that growth is slowing down.
On that slowing growth aspect, I think, you know, the Fed is walking, you know, on a tight rope at the moment because they must try and rein in that inflation without stunting economic growth. Now, how do you take this into account when you're looking at your portfolio?
So I think the Fed and the risk of a policy misstep is quite high from where we stand at the moment. Firstly, I think they're late in terms of when they are beginning to hike rates. They should have started 12 months ago. So last summer in 21. Secondly, what I said earlier, we are past peak growth and we're now seeing some slowing, and they are tightening policy into that slowdown. So I think the risk is that they'll make a mistake. But I also think when you look at their mandates, what they care more about at the moment is inflation at this point and trying to break that, even at the expense of growth. So they are very, very focused on that inflation story.
I mean, we've talked about high inflation, interest rates and supply chain disruptions and the impact of the war in Ukraine. But however, what do you see as the most underappreciated risks at the moment that, you know, some investors might not be paying attention to?
I would say it's volatility. So volatility started in the fixed income market. It's then moved into the FX market. And I think it will finally move into the equity market and haunt that market. It's been like a rolling wave moving across the major asset classes since the beginning of the year.
And over the last 2 years, it's become very clear that we need to do more about the environment. And the war in Ukraine has kind of exacerbated that point that, again, we need to be more environmentally conscious. Now, a common misconception is that analyzing ESG factors is only relevant when, you know, investing in shares or equities, for example. However, that's not the case, and they can be important for bond investors as well. What is your approach to ESG within the trust?
ESG is important. The genesis of ESG is, and what we believe in, is that we think that companies who look after all their stakeholders, i.e. ESG friendly, are more likely to deliver strong returns. We've had this kind of sensible income approach where we exclude certain industries, particularly resource heavy like energy sectors. And then we've also had a large cap bias, which has helped us in terms of screening out a lot of the companies that don't do very well from an ESG perspective. And the result of that is that we've got a relatively clean and high scoring ESG portfolio, by most metrics. And we view ESG as being a key part of our approach to credit analysis. And therefore, in February this year, we put in some ESG restrictions for the trust. So some of them I'll just mention are no issue is allowed to generate 10% or more revenue from oil and gas generation and production. We don't allow any company that produces controversial weapons or fur into the portfolio. And we also don't allow no sovereign bonds that score don't score free according to the Freedom House Index, which means that we didn't have any Russian exposure when the conflict started. We definitely think it's an important point.
So is ESG integration within fixed income catching up to the widespread adoption of ESG factors in the equity market, for example?
I think it is. I think it's becoming increasingly important where the end investors are expecting us to have and to be able to deliver an ESG approach, you know, looking at what the equity teams have done. And they expect something similar from the fixed income department. And within Janus Henderson, we've got the credit analysts working and, you know, analysing companies from an ESG perspective, but we've also got a central team that's shared between fixed income and the equity department, helping to navigate.
Finally, for 2022, what is the outlook for the rest of the year?
I think the rest of the year will be choppy, but for us, it's about staying true to our core principles of delivering a solid return through good stock selection and aiming to deliver a sensible and sustainable income to our investors.
Well, that's all we have time for today. Nicholas, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe, rate, review, and share this with anyone you think will also find this interesting. If you want to learn more about investment trusts, we have a wealth of information available on our website, which you can find in the show notes.
Important information, not for onward distribution. Before investing in an investment trust referred to in this podcast, you should satisfy yourself as to its suitability and the risks involved. You may wish to consult a financial advisor. This is a marketing communication. Please refer to the AIFMD disclosure document and the annual reports of the AIF before making any final investment decisions. Past performance does not predict future returns. The value of an investment and the income from it can fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount you originally invested. Tax assumptions and reliefs depend upon an investor's particular circumstances and may change if those circumstances or the law change. Nothing in this podcast is intended to or should be construed as advice. This podcast is not a recommendation to sell or purchase any investment. It does not form part of any contract for the sale or purchase of any investment. We may record telephone calls for our mutual protection, to improve customer service, and for the regulatory record keeping purposes. Issued in the UK by Janus Henderson Investors. Janus Henderson Investors is the name under which investment products and services are provided by Janus Henderson Investors International Limited. Reg number 3594615. Janus Henderson Investors UK Limited. Reg number 906355. Janus Henderson Fund Management UK Limited. Reg number 2678531. Henderson Equity Partners Limited, Reg number 2606646. Each registered in England and Wales at 201 Bishopsgate in London, EC2M3AE, and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. And Henderson Management S.A, Reg number B22848. At 2 Rue de Bitbourg, L1273, Luxembourg, and regulated by the Commission de Surveillance du Secteur Financier. Janus Henderson, Knowledge Shared and Knowledge Labs are trademarks of Janus Henderson Group PLC or one of its subsidiaries. Copyright Janus Henderson Group PLC.